It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Hour number two of three, kind of. We're off a little bit early today. Capitals hockey tonight here on the radio. So we will bring that to you pregame at 6:45. But same as always for right now, on a Thursday at 5 o'clock, it is time for Not My Beat.
Story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
And on Thursdays, we talk to Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team. Dan, what's up, dude? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well as well. Always great to chat. Always look forward to this. And I have a particular line of questioning that I want to get into you with this week, and something I've been thinking about after watching the Ravens Commanders game back on the phone or on the film on the All 22. And that is, how many, like, as you watch the game and watch the Commanders defense against the Ravens offense, how many of the problems they ran into do you think are wholly unique to Baltimore versus, like, maybe a few other teams could do that to a team like Washington versus things that you are worried about long-term, week in, week out with the Commanders? How do you think about maybe those three buckets of issues that the Commanders faced on Sunday?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think when you kind of look at that game specifically, I think it does start with the unique challenges that come with facing Baltimore and the way the Ravens are making teams try to defend them this year. Baltimore is just doing an incredible job of not only getting their heavy personnel in where they're either using, you know, two backs or two tight ends, and usually that second back is Patrick Ricard, who is, you know, a Kyle Juszczyk-ish kind of guy, where he's, you know, one of six offensive linemen, tight end, and a fullback at the same time, and can be used in kind of any of those places. So right now, when Baltimore is able to get into those personnel sets, they're making defenses play heavier personnel to match up. They did that last week, or they did that really well 2 weeks ago with when they played Buffalo. They did that a bit last week against Cincinnati, and then this past week against Washington. Like, as you know, Washington has been a nickel defense. They've run nickel about 90% of the times heading into that game. And then they were in base personnel with only four defensive backs, three linebackers, 25% of snaps against Baltimore. And that's just putting Washington in a place where they're not used to. And there's really not a better option, kind of as we talked about last week heading into this game. There's really no good way to try to defend Baltimore. Either you're putting all your resources into stopping Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson is going to go off like he did a little bit, or you're not putting enough resources into stopping the run game and you have Lamar and Derrick Henry kind of running all over. So it's Baltimore is, I think, this just really unique place right now where they're putting defenses in spots where they're just not used to defending right now. And then you kind of add in some of the, you know, talent deficiencies that Washington has otherwise. And then that just kind of builds on top of each other a little bit.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. So if we just to kind of round out the Baltimore bucket, like, how many defenses in the entire league do you feel confident going into a week that could hold the Ravens under 30 points?
And that's a great question. I really don't know. Cause they're so specific.
Like, to me, it's kind of the Chiefs, and I'd have to really hard think about someone else, because it's like, in order to do that, you also need to be able to possess the ball on offense. So, like, you need both, and in part, that's really hard to possess the ball on offense too, to kind of shorten down the game, because the Ravens are so freaking good against the run. So, like, they're just, to me, they're so well built. And I think the farther and farther I got into the game tape, and the farther and farther away I got from the emotions of, like, dang, they were close, or whatever else you felt during the game, the more I was like, that is probably the best team in football, and Washington kind of went toe-to-toe with them. And that's not to say that Washington's, like, secretly the second-best team, and I'm not saying that by any stretch, and this defense is actually good. I just eventually got to the point where I was like, man, dang, the Ravens are good. Hat tip. We're going to move on and see what happens moving forward.
Yeah, I think that should probably be the takeaway for Washington, because of how, you know, close they were able to that, with, you know, not a game where they, you know, looked overmatched. in spots. Like, I think, you know, Baltimore did have a fairly good hold on that game, like throughout the time they were playing, which, you know, is something. But, you know, again, Washington, yeah, like you said, did not completely look out of their league when matching up, which for what we were kind of looking at Washington coming into the season, if you had kind of said that by week six they'd be matching up with one of the best teams and just kind of, yeah, at least even hanging in the game, I think that that is definitely a positive to take away from that.
So then we get to the what actually does concern you moving forward part of this. What things, even this weekend against Carolina, do you look at with this Washington defense after seeing how they held up and didn't against Baltimore, where you're like, they have to find either some new guys to do some stuff or they need to find a better way schematically to cover for some of the issues that they're having?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Right, where there's just, I think the talent deficiency is definitely coming in and creeping in a little bit, and you're kind of seeing it more as, you know, when Emmanuel Forbes is a healthy scratch, that's, first of all, not good as being a first-round pick, but second of all, there's really not enough depth in the secondary to, like, make him being a healthy scratch look good also. So there are things like that. I think, you know, when you're looking at some of the defensive line, what's happening, and now, you know, you have more injuries there, I think that's going to, you know, be a factor that continues to hold up. So, you know, I think they are a team that if, you know, there is something on defense right now where there might be, you know, a player out there, if they can, you know, make a move, I would be open for kind of being a little bit more aggressive than they might have been thinking about going into the season, because when you have a great quarterback on a rookie deal and you're in year one of that rookie deal, like, that's the time where you really got to be, you know, kind of taking advantage of what you can and taking advantage of having that basically no money on the cap right now for a plus quarterback play. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do make a move. I don't know how big of a splash it's going to be, because I don't know if anyone, like, is going to be available in that way, but I would not be surprised if they do look into it a bit, because, yeah, I think that's just a thing, especially at the beginning of the season. We kind of always knew the talent wasn't completely there. So when you look at, like, going into what they're going to be doing, Carolina's been running the ball really well, and that is a bit of a concern, I think, if you're kind of looking into how they match up a little bit. And they've been passing a little better with Andy Dalton. I think, you know, the first two games were, I think, a little unrealistic in what's going to sustain over the year, but the way they're running the ball, I think, is going to potentially be a concern for Washington. That's where I think they really need to kind of stiffen up a little bit in how they've played so far this year.
Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. And last week we talked quite a bit about Jaden, as you had bumped him up to number one in your quarterback rankings as you guys reshuffled how you did the calculations, and he had been the best quarterback in the league through those first 5 weeks. What'd you make of his week six, where the numbers maybe aren't as prolific? Obviously, they lose, but it seems like the critical acclaim for Jaden Daniels was at an all-time high based off this performance.
Yeah, and in a sense, with lack of a better term, I think it was like the most quarterbacky like we've seen him, in a sense that he was, you know, standing in the pocket. He was forced to his, I think, quickest time to throw, but he had his most time in the pocket, and it wasn't, you know, a place where he was trying to run. I think he had his lowest scramble rate. So there were just, he was finding answers from the pocket, which I think was definitely, as we keep talking about, every week there is something new to Jaden Daniels' game that makes you feel better about what his development is going to be. And I think that was it. Against Baltimore, the way he was able to stand strong in the pocket, find answers, and he was, you know, extending plays a little bit, but it wasn't, hey, I don't see anything, I'm going to take off and run. He was, you know, able to kind of get through those progressions, kind of, they found a bunch of checkdowns when that was able to kind of, you know, move the ball a little bit. And then he was still making, you know, some of his wild, crazy throws that were insane, like the, you know, the second touchdown to Terry McLaurin was just, you know, one of the wildest plays with ball placement and how McLaurin came down with it. So it's just, again, one of those things where it, little by little, we just see more of these, you know, skills that he is showing on a week-for-week basis. And this was definitely the most where he was just, you know, playing a more drop-back quarterback, which is great because, like, they haven't had to trail a lot so far in the beginning of the season. So you don't know when he has to, you know, just rely on that straight drop back game, how much that's going to, you know, translate later in the season when you might be playing some better teams, or even if you, you know, get into the playoffs, you have to rely on that a little more. But the fact that he kind of showed that he had that ability, and we're getting to see that more on top of everything else, that is great improvement for what we're seeing from the quarterback position.
Dan Pizzuto, 33rd team with us. As impressive as Jaden was, watching Lamar operate was just wild. What impresses you so much about him? And do you feel like a guy that's already got two MVPs is maybe even playing better football than he ever has before?
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely is, I think. And this is kind of what we've wanted to see from Lamar Jackson in terms of how well I think he is just kind of handling everything. And I think that the situation is, he's definitely playing better than he was last year, but I think we also have to point out that the situation is so much better too. And I think that is just something that kind of builds on top of each other. Like having Derrick Henry in that backfield, a complete game changer in how defenses are trying to play them. So Lamar gets more stacked boxes this year, and he's throwing more passes against, you know, having eight men in the box, which then allows the, you know, the middle of the field to be open more. We're seeing more of that happen. I think Zay Flowers being a better middle of the field receiver in against Washington than we've seen the past couple weeks. So they're, again, opening up a couple things. It took them a couple weeks to get started and really figuring out what everyone's best role is going to be in the way they're playing. But Lamar, his ability to just play from the pocket right now, he's doing all of those quarterbacky things as a straight dropback passer. He still has that rushing ability that he's able to do when they have the read option with Derrick Henry. They completely killed Dallas with that. It's just, there's so many different ways that this Baltimore offense can be good, and how Lamar is playing really just kind of centers all of that. I think it's one of my favorite offenses to watch right now.
If that's one of your favorite offenses, how low on the list is Pittsburgh's offense?
You know, Pittsburgh has been okay. They've been interesting, right? And it hasn't been great. But they've been doing some interesting things, you know, and kind of like Justin Fields said, if he hadn't been, if he had been, you know, playing better, there wouldn't be any question of who the starting quarterback would be. So like there weren't as many negatives, you know, Pittsburgh's not on a scale of like a Cleveland offense, which just anytime I have to go in and figure out what is going on with Cleveland, or if I'm watching a defense or anything, and, you know, getting in the quarterback rankings, having to rank Cleveland's quarterback and just kind of just watching that
bottom,
game, that
put a hazmat suit on, watch like five plays, say like nothing's changed and get the hell out of there, Dan. That is the plan.
That's pretty much where Cleveland is. So you know, Pittsburgh is not really close to that. I am interested in a way of what it could potentially look like with Russell Wilson, because the last time we saw Russell Wilson, like, it wasn't, you know, Cleveland bad, but it was very stale, where it was a quarterback who used to have this mobility and this ability to extend plays. That just wasn't there. And I think, like, I'm not sure if another year and coming off a calf injury now is going to make that much better. So I'm a little more hesitant into what the Pittsburgh offense is going to look like going forward than I would have maybe been, like, a little more optimistic of how it could have grown with Justin Fields. Because I think they were doing some decent things. It just wasn't a great, you know, outstanding performance. And some of that was also, you know, personnel related. They don't have the greatest, you know, receivers. So it's tough. It's definitely not the most exciting offense to watch, and I'm not sure how much better it gets, if at all, if they make a quarterback change.
Well, so that's what I was obviously getting at, is the decision to go with Wilson over Fields. And I think you can separate the two things, right? Of Justin today was tremendous answering questions, taking accountability, saying, like, I didn't play good enough. It was not undeniable, obviously, that they are making the wrong decision here. My question for that offense specifically, though, would be, what does it do to your run game? Like, what is, you have these things that are working, that are helping you win games. You're possessing the football. Fields is moving the chains. The numbers are always in your favor because you're always terrified that he's going to pull it on your basic run plays. And that changes how defenses play you. And even though he has not been good as a passer, you've been able to win because you're trying to ultimately offensively just support your defense and hope that a couple times a game they give you great field position and you can take advantage. How much do they, like, let's pretend they get the best version of Russell Wilson that we saw in Denver last year. How does that change their offense, and can they still accomplish that mission?
Yeah, I mean, to start, I don't know how good the best version of Russell Wilson in Denver was last year. Like, that still was not a good quarterback. Even when, you know, they had, I think they had a couple games where they played, you know, fairly well, but that still, he still wasn't playing a great quarterback. But like you said, I think there was a lot of Fields kind of getting the most out of, you know, some of his scrambles. It wasn't always, you know, that designed run game that I think we've seen kind of take off from some of these other quarterbacks and some of these other better offenses. So if there's a little more, you know, I think it also is going to depend on how much they are going to have an Arthur Smith offense versus a Russell Wilson offense. Because I think even when we saw, like, his later stages in Seattle, every offense eventually kind of becomes a Russell Wilson offense. And that ends up being, you know, a lot of more shotgun, a lot more empty because he likes to do that. But at this stage in his career, he's not as good at doing those things. So he does kind of need some of those guardrails and some of the kind of training wheels type of, you know, under center play action types of things. So if they can get back to that and it's, you know, more of an Arthur Smith offense, I still have kind of trust in the design of the run game a little bit. So I think that can help. But if it's going to be so much based in shotgun and kind of doing the things that Russell Wilson thinks he can still do as a quarterback, that's when I think it really starts to derail the offense. And I think that's kind of how we saw it go off the rails a little bit at the end of his Seattle tenure and then even in Denver.
All right, last but not least, indulgence for our audience here. The struggles of the rest of the NFC East. If you had to, if I tell you you got to buy Cowboys stock or Eagles stock, and they're currently the same price, and you get to cash out at the end of the year, which one do you think you're making more money on?
Oh, man. I'm going into this knowing I'm not going to make money. But I think I would take the Eagles just because there's more talent there that gives them a bigger margin for error, especially on offense. I think Dallas is tough. I think Dak is playing well, but what is on his plate right now to carry this offense really, like, with just CeeDee Lamb as the only real receiving threat is really hard when the defense just isn't there and, you know, there have been injuries there. So with Philadelphia, at least, you know, you have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith back, and that made a huge difference against Cleveland. That's an even uglier game last week if those two aren't playing, and really, like, the biggest plays there were just throwing it up to A.J. Brown. So there are just kind of – there are so many outs in the way they have Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert when he's healthy. He left early in that game. And then Barkley. I think there's just a wider margin for error where someone can take over a game, and I just don't feel like Dallas has that right now. So I think Philly, just because of, you know, the high quality of some of this star power they have, although I don't really believe in that defense either, kind of outside, you know, Jalen Carter taking over a bunch of plays here and there. So, but the talent on offense, I think, just gives Philly a little wider margin for error.
Yeah, no, I would probably agree with you. And that's why I hate Philly more. It's like, you are so, like, Dallas is just funny. It's like, we all saw this clown crash coming. And Philly, it's like, Are you guys really going to do this again? Are you really going to implode like this? Oh, yeah, you are. Wow. And yet, I will say this, of the teams left on Washington's schedule, they scare me specifically for Washington the most, because they can do like three things that Washington I don't think is very good at, but I don't actually think they're good. They could beat Washington twice and I'd be like, yeah, okay, fine. Washington's still the better team because it's like, it's a matchup thing, but I actually don't think Philly's good at all.
Yeah, that probably explains it quite well. I wouldn't trust any of Washington's corners right now to be matching up with A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith, and either in man or zone. So I think, yeah, that is going to be a struggle. But in terms of, you know, betting on Philly to be a good team for the rest of the season, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that either.
Yeah, or it'll just be like a 45-40 game. That could be fun. Let's get some points on the board, shall we? NFC East football, just the way God intended. Dan Pizzuta with us here on The Hoffman Show, weekly on Thursdays, and writing every single day at the 33rd Team. Dan, always appreciate it, sir, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Yep, you got it. That is Dan Pizzuta, everybody, with us on the Team 980. Anthony, are we're sticking with the script for right now? We don't have haven't had any college basketball people.
No.
Dive in.
They have
check
not
in.
Hit me back.
Okay, so we are on. We haven't said this on the air yet because it just came through moments ago, but we are on Breaking News Watch. I said,
Breaking news.
Tony Bennett, the basketball coach at the University of Virginia, has abruptly retired effective immediately. He's 55 years old. Jeff Goodman and Nicole Auerbach both reporting that there's no health issue involved here. He's just stepping down weeks before their season opener. So if we can get someone to call in or we can get actual information on what's happening, because that's all we know right now. It's a developing story. We will break from some of the Commanders talk, etc., to give you a lot more info on this. Right now, that's what we know, so stay tuned. As of right now, the plan next is for Never Read the Comments, so we will do that. Our plan for 6 o'clock is the Pick 6, and then our show ends at 6:45, because we have Capitals hockey tonight. So if we can get someone to come on and talk about this, obviously when news breaks and people are reporting, the last thing they want to do is stop reporting and call a radio show. But if we can pry someone away from their phone in terms of texting and calling sources to call us, we'll do that. But in the meantime, we keep rolling with the football and Never Read the Comments next here on the Team 980.